Days off. I know that they sneak it in different ways. I worked at a union thing. I'm telling you, they do great things. And I love them. Don't get me wrong.
And it broke my heart, too, when I was trying to tell people. So I have to go to this. Plain water. Yeah, there's something else.
Did you read the paper today?
Yeah,
you should know this better than the drip fascination.
Okay, folks, it's 6 o'clock. We're going to call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Jeff Gentz.
Here.
Ron Frederick.
Here.
Ed Kubicki.
Here.
David Celebrey.
Here.
John Franco.
Here.
Monica Juhas.
Here.
Jeff Wambolt.
Here.
John Cargill.
Here.
Carly Lois.
Here.
All are present. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you to the supervisors who are not on the committee who are here. Staff should know that AAA is a good thing for our county. And we will start with the county clerk.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
So apparently I did this last year at some point. I don't recall. I don't remember 2020.
Yeah, neither do many of us.
Did we do it virtual? No, we didn't.
We did virtual last year.
No, we were at the Jeff Center.
We didn't do it in virtual. You might have been.
Yeah, you guys were. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But it's great for you to be here.
Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah, so I can. Right. It's easier to get the questions back and forth than that. Cool. So, if you looked at my budget, pretty much for the most part, everything's the same. We have rotating years of elections. On the odd years, we usually spend less. On the even years, we spend a lot more because there's four elections on the even years. Since COVID, we've gone, we're spending a little bit more on ballots than we had previously because there is a, people sign up for their absentee ballot. And then they can also decide to go vote in person. And so it's using up a little bit more ballots. They can't use that same ballot, so they have to be issued a different ballot. So that has raised our costs previously. I expect we might run into some of the same issues this coming year. Maybe not as bad, because things are a little more organized now, how to deal with the pandemic. So in 2020, we spent about $92,000 altogether for elections. It might reflect in some places as $165,000, but that was because we received a grant that purchased a lot of security equipment, and that wasn't actual ballots. So that's the biggest increase there from last year on my on the budget. I have also put in, you probably have seen, a request for a step upgrade for my employees. I have two full-time and one part-time. And so those are pretty much the changes that would be on here. A step increase doesn't really, it just gives the employee a little more room to grow. I recently have all new staff that are very qualified, and I want to keep them. And every one of them has experience with elections. Elections is taking a completely different role in the office than it did before. I mean, of course, we always did elections, right? But you all know, the whole climate has changed. And I don't expect to see it go back. And it requires it's not something you can train someone overnight on. And so it requires really good qualified people. And I would like to retain what I've hired. I can show you that so far amazingly, people are getting married.
I'm not going to ask for an explanation on that comment.
If you see but Jeff in line, let me know.
Yeah.
Well, so where we're at right now for marriage license, we've increased. We're at 169 more licenses as of today than we were last year.
That's good.
And looking back, even before pre-COVID, we're 134 more. And we're expecting that 2022 will probably show an increase. There's a Senate bill waiting for the governor to sign. And what that bill is going to do is change the effect, or right now, where you apply for a marriage license, it opens it up to where anyone getting married in Wisconsin can apply in any county. So we get a lot of people over the border that are planning a wedding up north, like say Door County, and they want to apply in Kenosha County because they don't want to drive all the way up to Door County to do a marriage license. So that is going to, I think this is going to be a positive effect on Kenosha County. It will, might hurt other counties, but I think it, for us it will be a positive. I think it'll bring in more revenue there. And passports, we are booked up with passports. We're catching up to where we left off last year. People still are getting their passports. I expect since the U.S. Department of State is open and operating, that we will be continuing to increase our passport applications because they're processing them. We had to shut it down because they shut down. And now they're getting caught up and things are going better and they have found a way to work around the pandemic as well.
Okay, any questions from the committee?
One.
This Supervisor Frederick.
This reclass you're getting, is that going to help you or is that going to put you upper in the area, more competitive in the area, you know? Obviously you got a couple from other governments that I've heard
that
from somebody.
Yeah, so, right, which they, one of them took quite a pay cut to come work for me, which is really awesome. I mean, not awesome for her, it's awesome for me, or for the county. This will help. She's at the top of her level, and this will help maintain her. And not that I think she's going somewhere, but I think it's really important to keep good employees.
Yeah, maybe it's appropriate. Maybe it's needed.
Yes. I mean, I feel that it's needed. I see the level of work that's being done. The requirement to go above and beyond what we used to do in our office when it comes to elections is just, besides all of the public records requests, just the knowledge and the expectation, and it's really important to us to educate the public about elections now that so many people have lost their trust in our process and that takes more time as well. You know, we didn't have to convince people that elections are safe and secure. And even though everything that's come out continues to show that they are safe and secure, we still have to educate the people. And that's part of one of the projects that my chief deputy will be working on.
Anything else, Supervisor Frederick? Supervisor Weinbold.
Did I hear you right? I want to make sure I got this right. If you buy a marriage or get a marriage license, you have to be married in the county where you get the license?
Not when you live in Wisconsin. So, like, you just had, yeah. So, if you're a resident of Kenosha County and you're getting married in Dane County, you have to apply within the county where you're a resident. But then you can get married anywhere in the state.
Currently. Okay, so the change is if you come...
Anybody can come.
What's the bill you said the governor's going to sign, or may sign?
It's Senate bill.
Well, not the name of it. Oh. What does it do?
Oh, it opens it up more, so it's more convenient for the public. Also, it does make it a little competitive because we all have different prices. I mean, not it just kind of ranges anywhere from 85 to 100 and something, and we charge 100. But like Dane County, I think, is 125, maybe 150. Some people would come down to save, you know, seriously. Believe me, they do.
But spend the day here.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's convenience, you know. They're here. They can get into an appointment at our office, and they can't get in up there.
There you go.
So, just it's more of a convenience for the citizens. And then, like I said, and then of course, people coming from out of state, especially the Illinois being right on the border, and it'll make it a lot. We'll get a lot more that way. All of the bordering states are going to benefit from that.
Thank you.
Anything else, Supervisor Wamble?
Oh, I move to approve. There's no other comment.
I'll second it.
It has been moved by Supervisor Kubicki, seconded by Supervisor Franco to approve. Any further questions before we close it out? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Good luck with everything else. Appreciate the work you put into this.
Thank you.
Thank you. But you didn't mention AAA.
You don't know how excited I was when I read that.
Good, thank you.
I'm serious. I got my dog dancing over it.
You're already passed. You know?
Some of these people know my dog, so I know what that means. She dances on for almost anything.
Registered deeds, please.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So that marriage bill she was discussing will also affect my office. One of the provisions in it is that currently, if you perform a marriage in a county, say in Milwaukee County, you have to file it with the Milwaukee County Register of Deeds. And the new bill will permit officiants to file that record in any county in the state. So if your home county was Kenosha County, but you performed a marriage in Milwaukee County, you could bring it to your local register of deeds for filing. We've had a lot of those kind of changes over the years with vital records, where they have instituted statewide issuance where I can issue vital records for any occurrence throughout the state. So if you were born, you know, in Door County, you can come to my office to purchase that certificate. Hasn't really affected our overall revenue from vital records. It's been pretty stable, you know, with the ebb and flow. You might lose some to up north, but then we gain some from up north. It's not a big change. With my office, there's not a lot of big changes. We don't have changes from odd to even years. We are steady as it goes, year in and year out. We are busy. Our recordings are 17% over where they were last year. With the assistance of the county executive, my revenue is projected to be $160,000 over what I projected for this year, which probably, Barna probably had something to say about that too. We're currently, through September, $130,000 over projected revenue for this year, so it's not a big stretch to project it next year at once, that increase at 160. I tend to be a little conservative in my budgeting, so that gives Barna a lot of room to push those numbers up. Other than that, I really don't have any big changes. You know, the county's done a great job over the years since I started 25 years ago, when we used to do all our own expenses and all our own, buy all our own computers and printers and toner and everything else back in the day. But now everything is streamlined through IT, through purchasing, and it's really been a huge help for our department, and I would imagine all the departments, the way business is streamlined here in this county. I do get a lot of compliments about people coming to search records in Kenosha County, not just my records, but the treasurer's records as well, that they love to come to Kenosha because we have everything so well managed as far as IT goes. So I will always put that plug in there for our IT and ask you to continue to support the IT department for Kenosha County. They do a wonderful job for us. So does anybody have any questions for me?
Any questions?
Move to approve.
I'll second that.
Moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki to approve. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it's approved unanimously.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Hello. How are you? Want me to start with the treasurer and then do the elected services one?
Sure.
All right. So I'll start off with the good news that we're AAA.
Do I have a motion to approve?
I like to think that part of that is this year we issued fewer tax certificates than we have since before the recession in 2008. So it's been good. The bad news is in the future we may see less interest on delinquent taxes going down the road, but Barter thinks we're going to hold steady for one more year, so he did his little magic there. I think we're going to hold steady one more year, but I really was relieved to see the numbers start coming in that people were actually spending that stimulus money on their taxes, because there was some fear at the beginning of this year. I think Patty and I both had it that we were going to see significantly higher delinquency rates, and as the payments started coming in, it was really a nice thing to see that, and it did help out in the discussions that we had with the board, so yay team. One thing is that we have a little less in advertising that we do in even numbered years, because we don't have to do the unclaimed funds ad, we only do that in odd numbered years, so that's one change you'll see in the budget. And then the other thing is gonna be the fund on the interest on investments, because we all know the interest rate's about zero right about now. We're doing a little better than we normally do, but it's a tough environment, and so BART has been smoothing that out on that, so that's the biggest changes in the budget that I can see there. Questions on the treasurer one?
Any questions from the committee? John?
Tax certificates just refers to tax deed eligibility.
It's a lien. So actually the tax certificate is the first step in the lien process.
Okay.
So you go delinquent on your taxes and you have a few months to pay them before we actually take out the lien on your property. And so that happens every year on September 1st. So it's a really good measure because it happens exactly the same time every year. So it's a good measure to kind of see where we're at. Versus any other time of year, it could be all over the map if you're not comparing apples to apples. So yeah, it's that first step. And then after that tax certificate issued, you have two and a half years to pay them before we can start the process to take a property. Make sense?
So it's good because they're low because people are paying their taxes.
Exactly.
Very good.
Right. Low is good in this case, yes.
Anything else? Seeing no?
Move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Juhas, seconded by Supervisor Wambold to approve the treasurer's section. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously.
Okay, next one is the combined office. I am boss of the year this year. We refer to it as the boys. And which is funny because we're all girls, but I'm boss of the year in 2022 for elected services. Becky is this year, so the biggest change in that budget, I think, is under the medical insurance line. And that is because our part-time employees under current
289.
Oh, sorry, you got to skip a couple pages. Sorry, guys.
It's 297.
297.
Oh, sorry. Elected. So what that is that's the budget that we share amongst the four elected officials, myself, registered deeds, county clerk, and circuit clerk. We have a satellite office out at 45 and 50 for the convenience of people who live west of the I, so they don't have to drag their butts all the way downtown to do the most, you know, basic services like get a copy of their death certificate or pay their property taxes or pay a fine or fee for Becky or something like that. So, and then we just rotate who's in charge, because as you can imagine, it could be a little difficult to have four elected officials in charge every year, so we just rotate who's in charge every year. So the biggest change in the budget this year is under the medical insurance line, and the reason that went down $9,000, you're like, when does medical insurance ever go down $9,000? It's because current county policy has part-time employees under a certain number of hours are no longer being offered the insurance through the county, and our part-time employee falls under that. So they removed that from the budget this year. So that's the biggest change. Otherwise, pretty much everything else is the same in that budget. So, any questions on that one?
Supervisor Juhas.
Terry, can you explain why the hours have been decreased or shortened out
this year?
There?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can. You want me to? All right. We had a person go out in ANS for 6 weeks, and we only budget for 6 weeks of full time for the part time employee that covers for that position out there. So we did not have enough in the budget to cover her going full time. And if we did, we'd get in trouble on several different fronts. It's a hard position to cover with somebody other than a person who's trained. That's why they developed that part time position, to cover for the other person. But when all of a sudden the time off doubled because of ANS, we went from a normal amount. Normally she covers 4 weeks of vacation and then a week or two in my office during tax time. But this year it doubled because she went out in ANS. The full-time person went out in ANS. So we're trying to cover that. So we didn't want to completely do away with things or shut things down. So we looked at what hours of the day we get the most hits out there and the most people come in. And it was that middle of the day time is when people come in. So we decided to do middle of the day.
Okay, and when is she expected back?
Middle of November.
Okay.
Knock on wood. So soon, hopefully.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Supervisor Wamble.
What, just clarify, you said you rotate every year who's in charge? What does that mean exactly? And is there ever a problem with that, or in your opinion, should it be assigned to someone permanently?
I think we've been doing it this way for...
Never a problem?
20 years. Yeah, okay. Normally the decisions...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, normally the decisions we get together and talk about them together, but it just makes sense to only have one person that the staff reports to.
Sure.
Because otherwise, you know, if somebody's going to call in sick, they shouldn't have to call four people. You know, they call whoever is in charge that year. So it just is kind of streamlined things and made it easier. And that way,
yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I was wondering if it should just be one, like, say you, yeah, permanently, or, you know.
It just makes sense. It works.
Okay.
Yeah. And that way, we each take turns, and every year we got the budget, and it keeps us fresh on what's going on in the budget and stuff like that, because you have to do it every few years and you're passing it off to the next person to do. So,
okay, thank you.
I think it works.
John?
What is ANS, please?
Oh, that's accident and sickness. So, if somebody's out, like, let's say you're having a surgery or something like that, you go out on ANS.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Okay, there's a motion by Supervisor Juhas.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Wambolt. Any further questions?
I think there was a question over there.
Supervisor Gully.
Any risk for that part-time employee with losing the insurance? Like, is she
doesn't take the insurance. It was offered previously.
Okay.
It's actually cheaper for her not to be offered the insurance.
Okay.
Because if she is offered the insurance per her husband's insurance, she has to take it. And it costs her more money than she makes an additional salary. So, yeah, she's perfectly okay with this.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We have a motion on the floor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
IT.
Thank you. Hope everyone's having a great AAA day.
I like it.
Good one.
Ooh, get time again.
Check the box of that's good. There we go. Okay.
So I'm going to be presenting the land information and IT budgets tonight. So I'll start with the land information budget. But one note before we get started, I know you already passed it, but I will say that Reggie's new staff has done an outstanding job. Working with them on anything from the open records stuff, election stuff, or as they've taken over the county board presentation stuff. They've just done a terrific job, so I just wanted to make a note of that. So if you could turn to page 350, that's where the land information budget is located. So overall in 2021, land information has had a number of different activities going on. They've assisted in help with creating the COVID, the different COVID dashboards that you've seen on the website, if it's the COVID vaccine or just the COVID infections. And then it doesn't do justice to all the different information that's been posted out there and is available. And they've been the core component in doing that. They've developed the technology that's displaying all of that. The data, of course, comes from health, but everything that powers it has really been coming from land information. So they've done a terrific job with that. They created and implemented a GIS data portal. That's a place where people can go and access a great deal of land information without needing to contact the county. Those were things that were frequently handled through open records requests, or a while back, I mean, this is going a ways back, people used to pay for some of those downloads, and with all the changes related to open records, they were just requiring it or requesting it that way. So they acquired 2020 imagery, so the images for all of our mapping have been updated from runs that happened in 2020. It takes time once that project begins. And then one of the things that we're so close on is there's going to be a new Bikes and Parks app that's going to be deployed. We're pretty excited about that one. And once that comes out, that'll provide people a really great opportunity to view the bikes and parks, how to gain access to the resources out there. So we're excited about that as well. Some of the future projects that are coming up, Public Works mapping applications. We're working with Public Works so that they can work on a variety of applications. Some of them are more internally based, some of them might be external, but it's a really good opportunity in the use of the project and the technology. Interactive mapping rewrite. I don't know how many people might use interactive mapping. If you are a user of it, most people that do use it know how critical a tool it is for so many people in our community and outside of our community, because when developers, business developers, land developers, anything are looking to do anything in Kenosha County, that is one of the most valuable resources they could possibly use. So that technology is not, or that application hasn't been updated in probably 5 or 6 years since we've made the last changes to that. And this is going to be a completely new rewrite to it, which makes it far more mobile friendly, so that you can use it on tablets and phones more effectively, but it also incorporates new technology. It'll work more effectively and efficiently, so we're pretty excited about it. Some of the other things, redistricting, I think that everyone's pretty aware that there's been a lot of work gone into redistricting. 2022 imagery project, that's part of this budget request, is going and moving forward with getting another run of imagery. Frequently that happens every 5 years, and the rate of change in Kenosha County and the southeast region in general is outpacing what you would really see in 5 years. You need to do that more frequently. You need to be able to see that information, see the changes that are happening, provide accurate information to the people that are looking as much as possible. So we are asking for that project in this budget. So we're all very proud of the accomplishments in land information so far. We're really looking forward to 2022. The staff has done a terrific job in making sure the office stays open, make sure they're ready and available for the public, while continuing to perform all the core functions that they do each year. So if you just take a look at the budget, the proposed land information budget, you'll see the personnel appropriations line. That's actually represents a 14% increase year over year. That's unusual for land information. Most of the time there stays pretty steady and just in line with whatever changes are happening as approved by increases. Where that change comes in is land information is requesting an additional staff. That position will be adding to their office a sort of a combination. So right now land information has a GIS analyst position, people who work and do all the mapping and everything that's involved with that, but they also have real property listers, and when you have a real property lister, there's nowhere to go to school for that. Real property lister is just something you have to train someone on, and it takes about 2 to 3 years to get a real property lister fully up to speed, because it's not just about some of the data entry aspects of the job. There's a lot that they have to know as far as legal descriptions, reading the deeds that come in, understanding the information, and doing something meaningful with it, making sure that everything gets recorded properly so that you don't end up years down the road dealing with misrecorded information, bad legal descriptions that end up with disputes among property owners. So it's a very critical position, and it's difficult to train. So saying that, right now there's one GIS person and one real property lister that are both on the, they're within range of retirement. And we don't know for sure if they may choose to go at the end of this year or may wait another 3 years. But we do anticipate that they're going to, someone, at least one of them is going to be retiring at some point. So we want to get someone in. There's also been an increase of work for land information. So as we worked through everything that happened with COVID, the number of mapping, application of mapping data was never more evident because of the amount of maps that we could show where things were happening. When you look at what happened with the social unrest last year, mapping was critical in that. So the mapping applications that are being used now, but also that we're planning to begin using in the future, those are increasing also. It allows us to deliver those products to people. And that's not just internal, that's providing products to the public and constituencies. So then when you look through the other parts of the expense budget, contractual is a 0% increase, supplies is actually a decrease, and that's really just a reflection of the staff development. As the more places have become offering virtual opportunities, land information has certainly seen a reduction in the need to travel to some of those, because some of the places that they maybe used to go are staying virtual, so their staff development has been reduced as well. And then fixed charges, there's an increase there, but that's just the public liability insurance. It was $490 increase. So it results in a net increase of 11.6% for the expense unit. Are there any questions on that part of it?
Supervisor Juhas.
I work in GIS every day. One of the first things I do after I log in is I log into Kenosha County, go to interactive mapping. I'm constantly in there looking up surveys, which I think are great that they've been uploaded if they exist. So we don't always have to try and find it in a parcel file or send someone down here to Joellen's office to get a copy. I think that's great. The imagery, the new overlay is fantastic, but it is changing rapidly. And I see in 2022, you're updating it again for $55,000. Now, is that all of Kenosha County or is that just a particular area?
It's all of Kenosha County, and we can touch on that now. The price of imagery has come down substantially. It used to cost quite a bit more for us to complete an imagery run, and through better technology, cooperation within like the region, the cost has just come down that much. So it's gonna be a full run of Kenosha County, just like the 0 and 5 years, which is what it always has been. It'll be a full run, just like the others.
So now, is this going to be something we're going to see every 2 years come before the board?
We're working on that, yes. We want to do it. We want it to happen every 2.5 years, get that imagery updated.
Okay. Well, I think they do a great job with the amount of staff that they have. The information's out there, and it's phenomenal what they do. And I can speak just from a professional point of view using the information, the website, and staff down there. So
great.
Tell Scott, thank you.
Will do.
Appreciate
thank
you.
John?
First question, dumb question. What does GIS stand for?
Geographical Information Systems. Geographic.
All right, so one of those. And then you talked about, so you're looking to hire an employee, mm-hmm. right? And there, but it wasn't clear to me, you have one GIS analyst, one real property lister that are both possibly looking to retire, and you also have extra work coming in. So are they just kind of going to fill work as it becomes available? Are you looking to then hire more people in the future to cover those empty slots? What's happening with them?
The plan will be to assess what the workload is in the next few years. We want this person for succession planning, certainly, to make sure that there's not a reduction in staff productivity. Without a doubt, the two current real property listers are highly efficient at what they're doing, and to lose just one of them would be a significant impact, especially the senior one, who's been doing this for a long time, and she does an outstanding job. So what we would do is get that backfill in. That person would initially start, a lot of their time would be spent in training, and it just takes a while to learn some of that, so what they're doing would happen a little bit slower. And then when we get to that point, when someone would retire, we would assess if we need to backfill that, or if that's a time we can reduce total staff count.
Okay, so you feel like you definitely need the one new hire as more work comes in.
Absolutely.
People retiring, but you're going to assess that other stuff later down the line.
Yes.
Okay. Other committee questions?
Move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved by second by Supervisor Juhas, seconded by Supervisor Celebrate. I was going to vote against the position, but nobody made a motion. So I'm not convinced that that's something that we need. You're assuming you have to start from scratch on training somebody and that you can't find somebody that has some of those skills to start with. So, I scrutinize every position that comes up new in the budget, and I'm not convinced that I understand succession planning, but that's usually for somebody higher up in the department. So it's just my comments, and I'll leave it at that. Any other, Supervisor Berg?
So piggybacking off of that, what's the intention when somebody does retire? Is to fill that position also, or to watch that one go away because you'll already have two?
That's, we're saying that we'll assess that as we get closer, because we really need to see what the workload has become and what is happening with the county. Work is reduced. You know, right now there's a lot of things happening with the lands that have to be recorded, so workload is pretty high, but I think that there would be an assessment done at that time. And to your point, Chairman, one thing I will add about that position is the current person that is the junior in there, she came from a title company, and she did have some of the experience. Some of the things that are one of the main roles of that's really difficult to teach is all of the legal descriptions as far as exactly how you describe a parcel of land from a legal perspective, and all of the different things that go into that. So even with her having some of that background, it's still taken her about a year and a half to 2 years to really get up to speed where she feels comfortable and the staff feels comfortable that she's running fully.
Supervisor Wamble.
Okay, to piggyback also on the last two comments, so what you're saying is it would be detrimental to the department if we don't make this hire? And if it is true that it would be detrimental, in what way? I mean, is it going to set us back? Are people not going to be served? What would happen if we didn't move forward with this?
I would say that it's not going to be immediately detrimental. I don't want to give the wrong impression. Long term, it could be, because when that person would retire, you know, we don't get 6 months or a year notice or anything like that. And the kind of things that end up happening is, especially when they need to record all of the legal descriptions, those kind of things tend to get backed up. And as soon as those get backed up, then every time someone's asking for that information or they're looking it up online, it might be old, and someone might be operating off of old information. It could manifest by they're not able to serve people at the counter as effectively, because right now the staff is able to, when they do go up and they help people, they're able to process those things really quickly. And then from the, and that's from the real property lister side, from the GIS side, it would really just mean slowing down the some of the projects that are happening in there right now.
Thanks. Thank you.
And that's my point. I mean, we've had other departments come before us. Becky has come before us 2-3 years ago saying, hey, we could use another body. You know, the clerk's office has come saying, you know, we're slammed. We need another body. So, I mean, when we approve positions, we need to have a plus and minus balance sheet of where that's going to be. I mean, you have not, I mean, you've told us what you feel, and we've gotten a hands-on thing from Supervisor Juhas, and I think the department's doing a good job. But, I mean, could we pilfer somebody from a title company, a surveying company? I mean, somebody who's, you know, up on legal descriptions and that type of thing. That's my point is, I understand succession planning, and I believe in it 100%, but I don't know if I believe in succession planning at the very bottom with people who may leave, when there's other departments who I know are slammed and could use extra people. So that's my comment. That's where I was coming from. So, I mean, but I'm not gonna carry the fight by myself. So if nobody else has any problems, I will support it and move forward. But that is a question that I was gonna raise. So, seeing no more comments, there is a motion on the floor that's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
On to the IT budget. So thank you again for having me. Before we dive into the full IT budget, I did want to go over a few things just to kind of give some insight to, one, how the IT budget process functions. Last year, after the budget, you know, there were some questions about exactly how does IT arrive at the numbers that they submit. So we wanted to talk about that, give you a couple updates on some activity from 2021, talk a little bit about how we prioritize things for 2022, and then jump into the budget. I won't take too much time on these three things here. So as far as the IT budget process, the first thing that happens is IT collects capital budget requests from across the county. All the departments and divisions have the opportunity to submit budget requests. They do it through our service management system. And in any given year, we get around 50 to 90 requests. It can vary widely. And it's submitted by all of the divisions and departments. That's around May to June. Then IT conducts a review. That's June to July, where we take all the requests and review them. We need to get quotes on them. We need to run through them for to figure out, is it something that might already be in progress that someone doesn't know about? Is it part of another project? Do we already have a product available? You know, whatever it might be, we go through that process. During that process, there's always some number that gets eliminated through that review process, just by virtue of we're already doing it, or, you know, we might be able to facilitate it with another product we already have. So that happens June to July. Then in July and August, the IT steering committee reviews it. So if you're not familiar with the IT steering committee, that's constructed of all of the department directors and Jenny. So we have them all there to represent their divisions and the requests that have come in through them. During that review, we bring in the budget, we evaluate it, we discuss its merits with them, and one of the most important parts of that process is the assessment and evaluation and prioritization. So there's frequently significant cuts that happen during that process. This year, it was about $1.4 million was reduced from the overall IT budget before it was brought forward to the county executive. And that's done by, really, the work is done by the department directors in assessing what are the highest priorities for each department and where do we need to be to spring project or the budget forward. So the reason that's so important is no department is then unrepresented in what their needs are. If someone makes a concession on a particular project and the division is unhappy with that, it really came at the discretion of their department director as well. So it's a very interactive process. Then we bring it forward to the county executive in August and September. The county executive reviews the budget in line with everything else for the county and assesses if we need to make any reductions, if we need to add anything back in that might have been excluded, whatever the case might be. And then we come to the Finance and Administration Committee. And that's where we are tonight. And then we'll go to the county board. So we just wanted to share what that process looks like and how we go about creating the capital, especially the capital. The operational isn't quite as significant that way. Any questions? No? Okay. So just a little bit about our 2021 activity. Just a quick staffing update. We did hire a security engineer. That's a very important role for us. It creates a much more dedicated focus and presence within the division on security. So that person was a reclassified position that was filled in February. We also have an infrastructure manager that was an open FTE slot that was filled in May. Both of those positions were filled and we're pretty excited about it. We're currently at full staff and we're very excited to be there. So a few projects that have come up, or to just touch base on, one was an electronic medical record system for Brookside. That system is now in production. That was a pretty big lift in consideration of how much was going on for Brookside already. So it took a huge amount of work from the Brookside staff to make sure we were able to get that implemented successfully, train all the staff on how to use it, and see it move into production. So we're pretty excited. That was within the last month that went into full production. So the vaccine clinic, that wasn't on anyone's agenda at the beginning of the year. But I will say, and I just wanted to call out that Mike Bascinelli's team and Matt McRaven's team, the customer service team, they did an amazing job in supporting the vaccine clinic. When we found out that we were going to be moving to this vaccination clinic and the volume of people that were going to be coming through it, Mike's team developed a very robust custom application designed to track the people scheduling appointments, the vaccinations that were administered, helping get the data put into the Wisconsin Immunization Registry. And that was a total effort from across the county. I mean, their HR was involved. Obviously, health was very instrumental in everything that happened. But that was, IT had a heavy involvement in helping to make sure that that went off. And we're very proud of what we were able to accomplish there. Two RFPs we ran. And RFP is a request for proposal. So when we go out for major systems and we need to assess them, we'll publish, it's called an RFP, and that RFP is designed to solicit feedback from vendors that's in a fair and standard way that they're able to submit their information so that IT and whatever business unit it is can assess that information. In this case, we did it for ERP, our enterprise resource planning and cashiering systems. So ERP is responsible for all the financials, purchasing, and there's a few other things that it does. But those are big systems for us, and we completed the RFPs. Well, we're nearly finished with them. We're in contract negotiations on cashiering, and we're finalizing the selection for the ERP system. GIS applications and system upgrade, that's really the system that Land Information uses, and that system needed upgrades. It was fairly straightforward, but that has so many places that it connects to, that GIS system, that it takes a lot of forethought to make sure that is executed successfully. And then another very important was the security camera system storage expansion. Really what that was for, we have over 700 cameras throughout the county now, security cameras, and we have to record the data. We record 131 days of data is what we retain. The counties, you can file a claim with the county for 120 days, and then we have those 11 days as a little bit of a buffer in case we get a last minute request. But that takes petabytes of data storage to store all of that. So that's something that we are recording now, and we just needed to accommodate the growth that we experienced over time. And then a little bit about security. We did an audit and had a lot of work going to policy development. You've got those policies tonight. So that was a pretty big project for us. That's not something that we've been able to do frequently. And when I say that we went through an audit, we used an external agency to actually conduct not only an administrative audit of looking at our processes, what policies we might have, but they also did what you imagine hackers might do, where they assessed your, you know, tested us to make sure that they weren't able to easily gain access. And then we went a little bit further and we had them do it inside our network. And anytime you do that, you find out a lot and you learn a lot of areas where you need to make improvements. So that was a pretty big change for us. So we're very happy we were able to do that. Staffing, I already discussed a little bit. We upgraded our firewall. That was a pretty significant upgrade, especially as we had so many people working remote and we saw so many people remotely connecting to our systems instead of just being on the inside and looking out. And so that firewall upgrade certainly facilitated and made it better for that process. Core security enhancements. There's a number of enhancements we made as a result of the audit that happened. They were important, and you know, those happened over time. Those were really more operational in aspect. They didn't necessarily require capital funds. It was just improving the way we were administering things or deploying them. And then one that we're working on right now is multi-factor authentication. Also, you'll hear the term MFA, that acronym. So if you've ever had, like with your bank is where most people have seen it, when you log in, it sends you a text and then you have to enter that code. It's a similar concept for signing in and accessing resources for the county data. The reason that that's so important is just consider the phishing emails that you guys see. And you see them not only just unsolicited, but you'll see some of them maybe that come from the county IT testing to see who's responding to them, that type of thing. During those kind of processes, you find that people, despite the education, you still find there are people who will respond and enter credentials into a system. And that's not unusual. We're not unusual in any respect that way. But where the multi-factor authentication becomes important is now someone's got the credentials, they're still not going to be able to sign into the resources because they don't have that code that gets sent to someone's phone, if it's a text message or an app or something like that. So it protects us, and we can see on a regular basis attempts from international attempts. You know, you've got things coming from Europe, Asia, South America, wherever it is, all these attempts, and we know that our staff aren't in all those locations. So it's a big and an important step forward for us. So that's something that we're doing as well. I just wanted to touch a little bit on the broadband, and I answered a few questions at the last board meeting, and if there are any other questions, just a couple things. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail on this. The U.S., just to give some context, the U.S. ranks number 11 internationally for quality of bandwidth connectivity as an average. There, especially with the U.S. having so much land, and you know, there's so much rural land to be covered, there's just not quality coverage, especially in those rural areas. And it is impactful to people, and especially now. We see that it was already visible to many people before COVID, but since that time, it's become even more visible because people gain access to health services, education services, remote work access, whatever it might be. Those are all important things for people to have access to. We're moving past the point where internet is just a luxury item and it's moving more towards becoming an essential item for people. And needs vary, there is no doubt. Some people might be satisfied and happy just having a smartphone and that's their only connection to the internet. But the majority of people are needing to get access to broadband. So we talked a little bit the other day about the grant that was awarded to Spectrum for within Kenosha County. We're gonna start to see that. That's still in draft mode, which means the PSC has approved it, the Public Service Commission. They've approved it, but it's not been finalized by the governor's office yet, which is fairly typical. It takes a little bit for it to go through all the approvals with the governor's office. So we're pretty excited for that. As far as 2022 goes, there's two key areas that I wanted to kind of highlight. One is ERP. So that is going to be, I'm not going to bury the lead here. So ERP is the biggest item in our capital budget this year. We're going to probably have a conversation about it. But really what we're doing is we're migrating from an on-premise solution to the cloud. And in the process of doing that, we have to go through migrating our data from our local servers to the cloud, and it changes the interface that people use, and it's not substantial. The workflows themselves are pretty much the same, but it does take a significant effort to get that done. And we are planning to do that as well as replacing our current cashiering solution. The current cashiering solution we have is not compatible with the cloud-based solution, so we just need to move to something that is going to work as we move to the cloud. And then there are some other benefits. There's enhanced reporting, there's additional features and application integration, so we get more intelligent data out of our system so that we can make better decisions about what's going on in the county. Security. Finalizing the implementation of MFA, which that's the multi-factor authentication. Endpoint detection and response. So that's really, it's sort of like a different version of antivirus. It's based on artificial intelligence, meaning that it's actually watching the things that are happening on a computer. Traditional antivirus relies on signatures, which it just means this is the way this virus behaves. And then it says, oh, I see something behaving this way, I'm going to stop it. What in this endpoint detection response, it's EDR is the acronym they use. What that does is it looks for any activity from anything that looks suspicious. And it doesn't have to be defined by a specific behavior that's already been identified. It's doing it intelligently to understand. And it increases our ability to protect our environment. Disaster recovery testing, one of the most important jobs that's also one of the most difficult to get to for an IT department is disaster recovery planning and testing. You can come up with a plan, but were you able to actually test it? So when we talk about doing testing, we would actually take some of our critical systems and have actually fail them over from our live production system in the public safety building to the backup system out at KCC. And that takes significant time and effort to plan that because you have to make sure that you've gone through all the checklists, that you've coordinated with the business, and that you execute that change so that it's not going to negatively impact regular business operations as well. So that takes time, effort, and when I say that, when we did our first test, which we didn't actually get to do any in 2021 so far, but we did our first one in 2020, I think that total hours spent was probably over 100 in total from all the people that were involved, because it did require coordination with all the departments. Increased auditing and vulnerability testing. We're going to continue to audit our environment more effectively. And consistently, we're going to do vulnerability testing. We're just going to be testing our systems to make sure, are they being, did we miss a configuration? Did we have software? This automated vulnerability testing, it regularly gets updates and it identifies new vulnerabilities on the computers that we may not have known about and tells us so that we can get them fixed and patched. And then policy. Policy is an essential part of any security program. It helps you to define what your behaviors are, what you support, and how you are going to manage your systems. But another really critical part to that is we go through regular audits, and when we go through an audit, either something official like HIPAA or CJIS, which is the Criminal Justice Information System, that's sort of the law enforcement version of HIPAA. When we go through this, they ask us for these policies, and frequently our answer is they're in development, because we are genuinely working on them, but when you look at doing a policy versus some of the other operational or projects that we have, the policy frequently takes the back seat. So after we completed the audit this year, we worked with an agency to help us develop the policies that you have. So my plan was to touch on the policies at the end after we've talked about the operational and capital budget, if that's good, or we could go over it now if anyone would prefer.
No, go ahead with the other stuff.
Great. Okay. So if you could, please turn to page 340 in your budget book. So here we have our salaries, our personnel appropriation. This is increasing 4.6% increase for IT. The increase there is reflected in the standard increases for salaries, but also we are adding, we're requesting to add a position, and we'll go more into that position, but that's for an asset administrator, and we'll talk about why that's important. Contractual, that goes down 0.4% actually. That's got a lot to do with, we retired the 4.9 system. We also retired a lot of costs associated with maintenance of that. So we are seeing a reduction there. Supplies, there is no change. I will make a note that within supplies, we requested $5,000 for machinery equipment, that's furniture. And then we similarly reduced our staff development by $5,000 to balance that so that we didn't see an increase there. Then down in the fixed charges, that's a 2.4 increase, which is the public liability insurance, which ultimately gives us a total of a 2.3% increase for our operating budget. So on a couple of things here, I did want to touch base on, we have seen a reduction in our interns. We reduced that by $20,000. Part of the purpose of that was to offset not only our position, but also the position for land information. So we had strongly believed in our intern program, and we actually have a couple people on staff now, three people, I think, that started as interns for the county, and successfully we were able to move them into full-time positions. Despite that, we think it's more important to move forward with these permanent positions, and that's why we're asking for this. Similarly, in the land information budget, they did eliminate their intern position to contribute towards the cost for the their position. So if you can just turn to page 341. So I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with some of these categories, but we have the web pages for land records. Anytime you see something referring to web pages for land records, those are really numbers that are set by finance more than anything, and they're a result of charges that are collected by the Register of Deeds and It's through the state where those funds are returned back to, you know, a portion of those funds from those fees are returned back to the county. So anything related to web pages for land records has to do with that. So if, unless there's any questions on those, I would ask you to turn to page 342. Well, I guess it's a little bit at the end as far as our revenue. At the end of 341 and then going to 342 is the revenue for IT. And there's a very small increase there. This is where IT receives funds, some of its internal transfers from like human services for staffing that we provide that's dedicated to human services. It's also health. We have an IT support contract with Summers where we provide them IT services. We have internet access fee. That's where we're providing internet for KPD and joint services since they're in the same building anyway. The land info systems fee, that's where IT dedicates a portion of the time from some of our developers to continuing to develop and make sure that things like land, the interactive mapping stays current and online. So, and then data processing fees, those are surprisingly, they haven't gone down more than they have, but we do collect fees on from people that have requested information. So so ultimately, our revenue has only increased 0.9%. It's a relatively small change. So that's really, that's our expenses, our operational expenses. So happy to go back and cover anything. I will cover more about the position. One is a reclassification and the other is an add to staff. So as far as that goes, if you turn to page 30 and 31, that's really where you'll see the rate reclassification and the add to staff. As far as the net budget impact. So the reclassification is to take someone that's currently a project coordinator and reclassify them to become an IT service manager. That position is going to be focused on developing and improving IT process and procedure. A lot of what we do, we've tried to move as quickly as we can, meeting the needs of the county for the different projects that we handle. But as we've done that, we've taken in a lot of systems and we're doing a lot of different work that we want to make sure that we're doing it effectively. So that's going to help us with it. But also, and importantly, it's going to develop and measure formal key performance indicators for IT. So we're going to be able to start measuring the performance of some of the things that we're doing within IT so that we can make sure that we're meeting the needs of the county and we can measure those. We're also going to begin engaging with customers in a more proactive way, conducting service reviews and identifying opportunities to improve. And then this position will also have oversight of IT asset management as a whole. And then that brings up the asset administrator. So this is an add to staff. It's listed as 0.75 because in this year we would not add that position until April after the first quarter is over. And this person would be responsible for inventory and control of IT assets. We have more than 1,300 computers, more than 500 mobile devices, be it smartphones, regular phones. We have 700 plus security cameras. There's well over 6,000 devices in total when you count up a lot of the other assets that we manage. The value of that is well into the millions of dollars, the total value of what we're managing. So there's a couple ways this role is important. One is it's a key role in IT supply chain management, making sure that we are managing the resources that we have in the most effective way, that we don't have extra computers that are sitting around. When you're managing that number of computers and sometimes there's turnover, we find that sometimes maybe someone squirrels away a laptop that was sitting on a desk or something, and you know, suddenly it becomes an extra laptop in the division, and then we're saying, wait, where did this one come from? Or those are the easy parts of the job. Another aspect is really related to security. You have to know what your assets are, you have to know what you're protecting, you have to know what kind of information you have on that asset. So it's important for us to understand where our assets are, what they're doing, and who's going to be able to manage them effectively. One of the worst examples of lack of institutional control for asset management was actually discovered in 2020 with Brown County. Brown County, they're a little bit larger than us, but they're similar to us in many ways. They ended up finding that there was a person who was in a trusted position in Brown County who was recently charged for over $600,000 in theft from Brown County. That person, it had a lot to do with the way they managed their assets. They didn't necessarily have the checks and balances in place that you'd like to see. That's something this position will help us to do and make sure that we've got implemented and we can manage it effectively. So that's really what that asset administrator is for. Are there any questions on it?
Supervisor Kubicki.
Yeah, I want to go back a little bit to some of the earlier comments, if I could.
We're not going to forget the positions, because I'm going to go there.
So well, I know ahead. You are, but I'm leading into a different
okay, good.
Thing.
I like it.
You talked earlier about interns, correct?
Yes.
And you said there were three interns, and those three interns in turn became county employees. I love that progression. And then now I'm hearing we're taking that out to help fund something else, correct?
Yes.
So you said three. How many numbers, do you know what the numbers are of interns that actually, you know, come on and then stay on full time, you know the way this county runs and how it's done and knows the department, knows the people within the department? Could you give a ballpark figure on that?
I'd say in reference to IT and land information, it's less than 10%.
10%. So
that would be a high on the high side, and that really has a lot to do with timing.
Right. No, I get that. I just like the idea of an intern here spending time here, getting to know our systems and all that, getting to know the people and getting to know what Kenosha County is all about, and then coming on board. I really like that idea, and when you quell an idea like that, I kind of have a little bit of reservations towards it, to be honest with you. Because I want us to stand out as a county, and I think that's a little aspect I think that's good. I think it's a good thing that we do. And I understand what we're trying to do now and you know, saving money here to pay for a position there, but I'm still a little, I don't know how I'd say it, but not really pleased with the idea of getting rid of interns, and I'll stop my comments at that. Thank you.
Supervisor Juhas.
Sean, do you do monthly security training for all your employees? Like, do they have to take a 30-minute test, a quiz, something? Do they watch something, and then there is a question and answer afterwards?
We do a mandatory annual. That's the one that's mandatory. Mm-hmm. And then pre-COVID, we were doing monthly optional ones. We weren't requiring everyone to do them each month. So really during COVID, the time, because it takes time to administer that program, mm-hmm. So we are starting that up again now.
So you will be doing that in 2022?
Yeah, we'll be starting it, I'm pretty sure, in November.
Okay. And then you spoke about the challenges of getting people set up working from home during the pandemic. How many employees were working from home at the height of the pandemic? Just a guesstimate. Because I know Clara can talk to that more later.
500-ish, I'd say that we're in that range. Oh.
Okay, and then how many are still working remotely from home?
That I couldn't give you a good estimate on. I know that on a regular basis. We have a couple hundred that we might see using our VPN, so we might see that at different times, but I couldn't say how many are remaining home versus are full-time in the office, so.
Okay. And then when was the last time that cashiering software was updated?
5 years ago?
Yeah,
so then. So it's time.
Yeah, and really, we'd expect through updates, we'd expect the system to last us longer than that. But as we move to the cloud, this particular provider made a conscious decision to not support, not move forward with Microsoft on the ERP.
Okay. So. And maybe you touched on this, but what is the savings going from in-house storage to going to the cloud?
Do you mean for the ERP?
Yes.
Or I wouldn't say that there's direct cost savings to that. It's pretty much a break even from a cost perspective for us, because it's really based on the licensing. And we're already set up and licensed in a way that we can move to the cloud without increasing our licensing fees.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Frederick.
I'm talking about the personal email that I get, and you've got this statement, the thing in yellow, it always says, this email came out of the outside the organization. What do you mean by that?
That if you send something from Gmail to a KenoshaCounty.org email address, that it puts that banner at the top so that people know that it didn't come from inside of KenoshaCounty.org. And the biggest reason for that is, say someone sent something from ronfrederick@gmail.com and they were trying to pretend to be you telling someone, hey, send me these Apple gift cards, get it done right away. And you know, that's been one of the most popular ones.
And
there's a lot of people that have responded to it. And by putting that up there, it's just another step to alerting people this is not from that person.
I dump that as soon as I see that. But the other question is that we get these emails, they seem to be like orchestrated by somebody. And it says, I demand that you vote for against mandate mass to Per County. We're going to keep an eye on you, and we're going to make sure that you don't vote for us. And if you do, we're going to. Is that yellow there for them? I don't remember.
It would be.
Yeah,
if it came to your
because they give you a name and address, but you know, if you want to talk to me, all you got to pick up the phone. My phone is in my pocket. I answer the phone. So these people are orchestrating something, and I don't know where it's coming from, but I think I know, but I can't prove it. Okay, so and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of being threatened.
I genuinely say that more often than not, those emails are coming from somewhere in Eastern Europe or something like that.
I don't think so.
They work so hard to prey upon the things that people are most afraid of. I mean, we saw such a huge spike once, you know, really in March and April.
They have addresses of people in Kenosha County, and they have a name after it.
Mm-hmm.
And they even have a phone number.
So much of that information is available through public records, and all they do, I mean, literally, these people, they just have people that program to go out and collect that information from websites.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because this mask thing is going crazy with the school board and everything. I just figure it's coming out of Kenosha County someplace.
I would guess not.
That's my guess. Not that I feel threatened, because I just... threatened a few times in my career.
Supervisor Juhas.
Sean, I forgot to ask you. I know a while back there was a request to look into hybrid for committee meetings. You know, mm-hmm. So is any of that in this budget anywhere, and where are you at with that as far as allowing people to be able to view and listen?
We are doing research right now. And really, we're figuring out what devices are going to be able to, or services are going to be able to meet the need. Because once we started talking about that, I went to, when I was at WCA, there was a presentation from Von Breesen about broadcasting public meetings. And there's a lot that we have to consider when we do that. Just as far as accessibility, what kind of technology we use, how do we manage public comments, and so it's, I'd love to say that it was as easy as when we did it during the COVID period, but that was extenuating circumstances, so I think everyone was far more willing to just kind of leverage what we could. But right now, when that's not the issue, I think we do have to work on settling some of these questions and what we need to do. So we're investigating the technology right now to figure out what we can really do and what different services can offer us. And then we're gonna, Tom will have to talk to the board and find out more about what the board really wants from a requirements perspective to make sure that we're able to meet that.
I thought my understanding was that it wasn't so much for interactive, it was just for people to have the opportunity to listen and to hear what's going on. And I know the issue was because we meet in so many different buildings, instead of having one central meeting location, that was a challenge. Is that?
That was my understanding of the request as well.
Yes.
But all I could say is I don't know that the request fully understood the implications of everything else that we need to do. Because really, we have to figure out how are we publishing that information, making it accessible to people, in talking or in listening to the presentation. There is a lot of information that, you know, I just didn't realize about how you have to offer it in the same format and you have to make it accessible to people, and then also considerations. So let's say that we do offer it through the internet. There, you know, it was their opinion, and I know that that's their opinion, but it was their opinion that then you also have to make sure that you offer resources so that people can watch it on the internet. Maybe they don't have internet at home. So do you offer something where they go to the job center or somewhere else and they can watch it on a computer there? Are you telling them that they would have to go to a library or whatever the case is? So there were just considerations like that, that for open meetings law, that they're saying you really need to consider how you're implementing that kind of a solution. And they weren't things that I had necessarily thought of before. It was a very good presentation, and it wasn't designed to tell everyone that they did everything wrong. It was to help you understand the considerations for open meetings law.
Because I would think if someone was going to go to a library to listen to a meeting, they would show up in county board chambers or go to the committee. If they're going, I think what the ask was for people who cannot leave their homes for whatever reason, how can we make the meetings accessible to them so they can hear and see what's going on?
Absolutely, I understand what you're saying. And I'm just going based on, we can't assume what people will or won't do, just meaning maybe we have a person who lives a block away from the library and they don't have reliable transportation to get downtown. Or if it's, you know, the way some of the recent budget approval meetings have gone, where they may go until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, maybe they don't have reliable public transportation available to get home safely, and, you know, it would be too much to ask them to walk. And those were just some of the, you know, those were some of the considerations they were recommending that you consider before you implement something. That's really all it was. So we're just trying to make sure we get all our ducks in a row so that we do it the right way.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Salaberry.
Thank you. As I look at page 341 under your information technology capital, you go from 2021, if I'm reading this correctly, at $2.7 million approximately to a proposed budget of $3.5 million. First of all, I don't know if this amount corresponds to what's on page 342 under revenue before your capital. And secondly, there's a jump of $800,000. Where does that $800,000 come from?
And we're going to get into detail about the capital, but real quick on there, if you look under column 2, you'll see 2021 adopted budget there, and that says $2 million. That's what was approved in the budget. When you look at the column three, that's the 2021 budget adopted and modified. That includes our carryover funds from the prior year. So we had $7 million in carryover from the prior year, or $700,000.
Well, show me the $7 million, man, please.
We should have a few interns at.
We'll get a lot of interns then.
Bring on.
So that's what that $2.7 million is for. And then when you look at the $3.5 million, what you might consider the normal IT budget is $2 million again. There's $1.5 million in ARPA funds for broadband. That's where the other 1.5 comes from. So, we're going to get into it in detail, but that's where that extra 1.5 comes from.
Okay, that answers my question. And does this indicate then that in 2021 you received no federal grant money then? If I'm looking correctly at page 342.
I would say that IT seldom receives federal grant money directly. The majority of the time that IT might receive federal grant money directly that would reflect in our budget might be, you know, some of the projects that I've seen, like, I don't know if you recall years ago when Google was doing this big thing to get fiber to deliver to people, and then there were grants that were coming out to help places do that. More often than not, if there's any federal grants, it's directly to the business unit. Maybe it's health or the sheriff's department. Those would be the two most common that we've seen. They would get grant monies that would show up, and then they would come to IT to help spend those on the technology that they're requesting.
Thank you, Chairman.
Sure. Supervisor Gully.
I think in 25 years of IT budgets, I've never had an IT department voluntarily give up a PM headcount. And you're doing that with moving the one coordinator. Is there any risk in that with everything on the roadmap?
Yeah. I mean, there's always
trading off. You're making the decision.
Right. At the end of the day, we have, especially moving forward, we've worked to take on a little fewer projects, you know, especially some of the larger ones this coming year, certainly. And we're also working to specifically streamline what we're doing with project management. So there's a couple of ways that we mitigate some of that risk. One is, especially in large projects, when we're putting together the budget, we'll usually look to increase some of the funding we're requesting to get help with that. So where our project managers are still they're going to be focused on the projects, we're getting help from someone like a business analyst or something along those lines to help the project continue to move along while the project managers stay focused on the overall project.
Okay. Good luck.
Supervisor Byrd.
Are you going to be here tomorrow for Public Works?
I did not plan to be there.
Okay. So something that you had mentioned earlier is going from the ERP to cloud. In Public Works tomorrow, they're going to be talking about expanding the server area, correct?
Yes.
At the KCC. Mm-hmm. Can you explain the necessity to expand that when we're talking about going to the cloud for server space for what we're going to be doing out at KCC?
Absolutely. So KCC they're expanding not only for us, but it's also for joint services. So as we expand that area out there, there's a couple areas where it's important. One is that has continued to grow as our backup data center. So as we've added more equipment, as joint services have added more equipment, the room has become very cramped. It was essentially a big closet that we were able to, you know, it was a big one, but, you know, we got some air conditioning in there, we got a little extra power in there, it's connected to the generator, but now it's turning into something a little bit more legitimate for that backup data center. Again, for both us and joint services. But the other area that is vitally important is that's also where our elections system equipment will be stored. It was stored downtown in the past over in the public safety building, which is a secure building, but we absolutely saw the risk of that building. It's far more of a target than KCC is. And with the expansion of KCC and some of the needs for the election stuff, you know, just the elections process, it's a very safe and secure location. It also does give the county clerk the opportunity to be a little more central in the county, so if they do need to handle things that come up, they're not coming from all the way down here to handle something, if it's delivering new ballots or extra ballots, whatever the case might be.
Anything else? Okay. All right. On three occasions, you've mentioned going outside for things. Worked with another agency tested this, help from a business analyst. Is that in your other professional services category?
It's there, and if you look in our capital budget, there's Project 9. We also have $135,000. So as we work on our capital projects, it also comes in there.
So do you just throw X amount of dollars at those accounts and then use it as you go along, or do you know what you're going to use outside agencies for when you're setting your budget?
We frequently know, so especially the other professional services, that's one that we know going in pretty tight what it is we're requesting for. The capital projects, the reason that one's a little bit more flexible is we use that funding to help alleviate pain points in our capital projects. So as we go through a project, one project we may not have anticipated that it was going to be large in a certain way, or that we might need a specific sort of help in that project, and that's where that funding has helped us to move past some of those pain points.
I can add a little.
Go ahead.
That. In addition to that, when you have large projects that are capital projects, you can also capitalize those consultant costs as part of the project, so now you're borrowing for them in the overall project.
Okay. Okay, so you removed a project coordinator and you added an IT service manager. That's what in the you're doing. It's okay.
Yes, sir.
And then you're going to add an asset administrator. You're only saying 0.75, but that'll be a one full position next year because
yes,
you're just hiring it in one quarter of the way through. So briefly explain again why you need an asset administrator to follow through on all the computers. Isn't this already being done?
We do it, yes. Do we do it as well as we should? No. I mean, it's not that I'm not trying to take away from what IT does. I think that the staff do a terrific job, but the reality is we have a lot of moving parts, and when we are receiving equipment, when we need to deploy it, manage it, track it, there's computers on a regular basis. Each year we're replacing 200 or 300 computers, and it just helps us manage that life cycle. But I will say that it goes a little beyond just what you might think of from did this piece move from the job center to the PSB? It's also someone who's monitoring warranties on those. What is the what is the life cycle of that, so that we're doing more effective life cycle planning? It manages all of those aspects of IT asset management.
All right, any other questions? John?
I just have a quick question off that topic. So to make sure I understand it, you're cutting, say, for instance,
yes.
So how many people would that be? What would they? Is that the wrong term?
The interns vary. So it's over a year we bring in interns whenever they are available, you know, when we're able to attract someone to come to work at the county. And some years it's been maybe we have had four in a year, and some years it's been we had someone who graduated and was able to stick with us through the majority of the year. So it varies, the number varies depending on what the year brings and the interns.
So are you putting that program on hold because you need the money this year, or are you just kind of scrapping it?
No, we'd love to go back to it, but for this year we did reduce that budget, and we want to revisit that in the future. It's just in an effort to fit in some of these other changes we have requested. We were trying to balance it as much as possible.
Thank you.
Yeah, like John mentioned and Supervisor Kubicki, I do like the intern program as well. So you had 2 to 4. What did they end up getting as far as pay? I mean, what did it cost? What are you eliminating?
It was $15 an hour was around where we were usually starting that intern, and depending on the intern and perhaps how long they had been with us, they might have gotten up to $18 an hour. We had one intern who came back to us, I think it was on the third time he was back with us, and he was an important part of us helping to move everyone remote when we were going through all of that. He was also someone who helped us with what we were doing out at Bradford, or when everything was happening with the riots, the social unrest. And he is, we've now moved him into a contract position with us. And that's where, in the other professional services, that's where he's reflected.
Yeah, I mean, both of my kids have their current jobs, which are full-time jobs, and they started as interns. And I just think when we talk about the workforce in our area and working with the schools and that type of thing to try to get, you know, attract and retain employees in this area, I think IT is where, I mean, my son does that. He actually works for the water utility. Don't hold that against him because of the city. But, you know, he started as an intern and now he's got a full-time position there. So, I mean, I think that that's an important program to connect with some of our youth coming out of the school. So I also am a little disappointed that that's going away. So what if we could dive down just really briefly? You said you pay him about 15 an hour, him or her. What does that equate? Is $20,000 roughly for one per year, or what do you? I mean, if we were looking to budget, you know, two interns for this upcoming year, what would you roughly think that would be?
I don't want to, it just depends on the intern and how long they're available. So if we had one intern at $15 an hour for an entire year, that comes out to about, $30,000 a year, I think. So, you know, we can't necessarily afford that. The one we had someone there for the full year, that was when he was early on and he was only making $12 an hour then. We worked with HR to increase the rate for the IT interns, mainly because the competition. IT interns were getting $15, $18, $20 some dollars an hour. So we love the program. We absolutely think it's been terrific. Although one of the people I mentioned was an intern, he's been here with the county for 20 plus years now, I think. Jonathan Crescent, he's the one who did the COVID application.
Great guy.
He's just outstanding, and he came as an intern first.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's too bad that's not there, because we sit around this table and we talk about ways to get youth involved and way to build up our workforce, and that's IT is a great attractor for youth coming out of some of the colleges. That's disappointing. But, okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, move on to the capital is your last piece to talk to us about tonight.
Except for the policy, which is super exciting.
I know. I can't wait. Well, all right, go ahead with
the
capital.
Hold me down.
Yeah.
Okay. So the capital budget, and I meant to write down the page number. It's usually in an appendix at the end of your at the end of your budget book. If we go to that one. So there's a year-to-year comparison of what we're spending. So overall, our The core IT projects come in at $2 million, which is the same as the prior year. But, you know, in the interest of time, I'll kind of cut to the chase. If you look at our projects going down the list, and, you know, some this might be a little bit new view for some of you, so we separate our projects by business units, essentially. CALM is one that not everyone knows what it means. It's Kenosha Area Land Management. That is the county clerk, the treasurer, the register of deeds, land information, and planning and development are all in there. And then the rest follow pretty much what you would expect as far as human services, finance, that should say finance and administration, because that's where HR requests would be. Countywide infrastructure, public works, audio video projects, web enhancements, IT contractor support, and then capital adjustments. So when you go down the list, you can see that project three is the big one, and that's where ERP is located. So CALM applications, we're just gonna jump right in. So if you don't mind going to the next page, project one, CALM applications. We really only have one project in here for 2022. This is the election software upgrade. So when I talked about, we've got a couple of primary focuses. One is ERP and one is security. This falls within the security realm. This is a necessary upgrade to make sure that we stay on the most current version of the election software. And if you notice, on the left side are the 2021 projects. So if you do happen to have a question about any projects from 2021 and their status, please do just let me know. Project two, it's a pretty small number. There's a couple in here for Brookside. It's just to meet the needs of the way they're doing business now. They've got people located in different areas than where they were before, and this helps keep nurses and the staff at the point of service that they're offering. So it's a pretty important function, or, you know, it provides a lot of benefit for a relatively low cost. Project three, finance. So finance and administration, Dynamics 365 migration to complete that project, that's $785,000. So if you look over in the 2021 side, you'll see there's another one for $475,000. That was the first half of it, and we were completing the RFP, and that was where we identified how much additional funding would be necessary for that. So if you'll recall from the first page, there was an overall reduction for the IT budget. I'll get to that later. This is just to finish the ERP migration. The ERP system that we have now, we did implement that. It went live 4 years ago. So when that went live, we knew that we were in a position where we were getting it at the end of that product and they were gonna move to the cloud, but they weren't ready for a cloud implementation. So this is just recognizing that eventual progression into the cloud. So when we complete that project, that'll put us in the cloud for the long term. A couple of things on that. We had to wait until the government cloud was available as well, so that it makes sure that our data is protected in the way that Microsoft has set up government protections, which includes all the staff that work on it are CGIS and HIPAA certified. They've all had background checks run. There's a lot more protection. Data stays in North America. It doesn't go overseas. So there's a number of protections that happen when you get into that government cloud. Finance, the Ceridian Day Force, the next one, that is a licensing fee. That's the capitalized component of that. And the same for the next one, the Microsoft EA for Dynamics. That's the capitalized component of the licensing for the ERP. The Ceridian Dayforce is for payroll. Then there's another one here, a request for proposal for electronic timekeeping system for $35,000. We've been using Kronos for, I don't know, 20 years or something. It's without ever looking to see what other products might offer. So really, we're looking to run an RFP next year to assess Kronos, where they sit in the marketplace, and figure out if we should be looking to run an RFP and look for other competitors. So there's also this Kronos Manager's licenses. As we just grow as a county, we need to add licensing for managers. And then there's this other one, request for proposal for HR payroll system. This is really going to run in conjunction with the RFP for the timekeeping system, where many of these systems are, they offer a consolidated system for HR, for payroll, and for timekeeping. So we're going to look at that as a whole together and see what really meets our needs the best. Any questions on this one?
You skipped the most important one about the legacy budget book.
Oh, yes. The legacy budget book for $5,000. That is to, right now, when your budget book gets created, it's compiled from a large number of different sources, PowerPoint presentations, Excel spreadsheets, all these different places, and it puts it all into this one book. And I can tell you that if something's not going well with that, it's panic time. And that hasn't been updated, because that's an internally developed application. That hasn't been updated probably at the same time Kronos got implemented 20 years ago or something. Yeah. Might have been Jonathan's first time.
How many years ago?
Jonathan wrote the program, and every year we put a Band-Aid on it and put another Band-Aid on it. This will fix it.
I was still in youth baseball. Just kidding.
Hitting home runs, I'm sure.
It's all right. It's diverse. That was just very important to me.
Yeah.
So any questions on anything here?
I have.
Supervisor Salaberry.
Thank you. What's the wisdom of needing to update or put out an RFP for electronic timekeeping? Is there a problem with reporting or keeping our wage and hour records?
No, there's not a problem with it. We do it successfully all the time. The system that we have right now, it's, I don't want to say it's antiquated because we have continued to keep it updated, but even within their system, it's Kronos. Some of you guys may have seen Kronos because it's used in a lot of places. But really what its features aren't current with a lot of the features and functionality that's been available for a while. And even within Kronos' own product suite, it's not their most current product. So they have a new product that they're encouraging everyone to move to. So we really just need to do an assessment and figure out what all is available to us so that we're making the right decision. When we do need to make changes to our, and the complexity of a timekeeping system, I can say from personal experience, I had no clue. The Sheriff's Department alone accounts for such a huge level of complexity because of all of the union rules that have been developed and agreed to, being able to programmatically apply those so that it's done correctly all the time is a huge effort. And we're definitely looking for something that is more straightforward, a little easier to use, a little easier to handle updates and make changes to, and integrates with some of the other systems that we've implemented, like the new ERP system.
You wouldn't know by way of collective bargaining agreements what you'll have to look for, though, for features of these programs, would you?
Generally, we know the complexity of what we need to look for, and that's really what we have to do. Is if we give them the collective bargaining rules that we have now and, you know, ask them how would those be implemented within your system, I suppose that collective bargaining could introduce some even more complex rules, but they are very complex now, and when we do need to go back and make a change, it's the team does it, and they do a great job on making sure that it's done accurately, but there are systems that are far more feature-rich and functional, capable of integrating with these other systems.
And so this would be a RFP just to see if something would be in compliance with or could suit the needs for what as compared to your current program.
Well, like I said, one of the things we'll do is we'll do it in conjunction with the HR system, which and the payroll system, which timekeeping has to integrate so tightly with, and we'll look at what is the best solution. It's entirely possible that we find that all of the existing solutions still are the best for us, but we don't know unless we go out and conduct the RFP. And when we go out and conduct it, there's quite a bit of work that goes into defining requirements, identifying all the specifics of what system shortfalls there are, where the gaps exist, and what challenges we face, as well as just what features are now available that we would like to be able to take advantage of.
Thank you, Chairman.
Sure. Any other questions? Supervisor Burke.
From what I'm hearing, it sounds similar to using an iPhone 8 versus a 13, 12 or 13 and 8. Eventually, correct me if I'm wrong, the Kronos system that we're using now is 20 years old. While they're upgrading or making changes, eventually they're going to get to a point, that's why they're offering this new system, that it's not going to be relevant. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's a good analogy, yeah.
Okay, so it makes sense because eventually it's going to slow down enough or it's not going to have the assets or the pieces that we're going to need on our account set.
Right. Okay. Project 4, countywide infrastructure. So the top one is our Office 365 Enterprise Agreement. That's another, that's like the capitalized component of our licensing. We also have the 2022 technology refresh for $175,000. That's going to, we do that every year. It's a life cycle type of event for us where we're just replacing the computers that are aging out. In this instance, we're planning for 110 computers. The next one is network switch refresh, which is both a life cycle and a security project that we have. That's going to replace 25 switches in the county. So if you're not familiar with the terminology switch, that's when you plug your Ethernet cable into your computer, it goes back to the network equipment, which is called a switch, in a closet somewhere. And all those switches, they handle how all the communications happen. So if you've ever seen a rack where it's got tons of wires coming out of it, that's the switch. And they age out just like everything else. And so this is replacing those. The ones that the 25 we've identified for replacement are all, they've already hit their end of life, so they're not going to be receiving security updates, new patches, that type of thing. And when it's something that is so core to your computer operations, it's you have to maintain those. Security remediation program for $70,000. That's going to go into a number of projects that are going to help us with what we're doing, continuing with our security program. One of the major things we'll be doing is another audit. So as we've made changes over this year and we'll continue into next year, we need to audit and see where we stand in comparison to the first one. Replacement of out-of-warranty cameras for $33,000. That's a security item, and when we first started deploying these security cameras, it was about by the time we get to next year, it'll be 8 years ago, and the first place that we implemented them was at Brookside. So this is to replace around 30 security cameras at Brookside. That was our first location. I will say that we're identifying this as one of these things that we consider a life cycle product, where we just have to, if we're going to continue to maintain these cameras, we have to regularly plan to update and replace them. So there's these next two. It's Veeam, which is software that we use to back up our data. As we have more data that moves into the cloud, this lets us back up the data that's in the cloud instead of relying just on what the cloud providers have. So there's a number of areas where that's very important for us. The next one, upgrade Laserfiche. Laserfiche is our electronic content management system, which is when consider like the DA. I don't know if you guys heard much about the DA project, where over the last 7.5 years they've gone to a nearly 100% electronic file system. And if you ever saw what their basement used to look like, you would really know how big a change this has been for them. So Laserfiche supports that. And it's not just them, it's all over the county that we use this. It integrates with our ERP. Human Services uses it extensively. We've done scans for Register of Deeds, for land information, for public works, planning development. I mean, we just do these projects and there's more and more data. So this is just upgrading that software. UPS replacement. All of our closets have a UPS in them, and where we've got network equipment, and the UPS is just there to bridge the gap if it goes to generator or for minor power outages. Power Platform pilot application. Power Platform is a new technology, a new programming style that it's called no code, low code. And really what it does is the intent is to get us into a position where we can develop applications faster and more efficiently because there's a significant framework already sitting there ready for us to use instead of having to write all of it ourselves. IT source control, that's a security item, and that's where we need to take all of the custom programming, the programs that we've written, and get them into a single location where anytime there's a change made to it, identifies it, it does version control, some functions like that. And then a fiber upgrade to add redundancy. This is to add a redundant fiber leak from the pretrial facility. Right now, the pretrial facility has one fiber link between it and the other buildings, while all the other buildings have two. So this is just adding that. Any questions? Project 5, law enforcement. So this includes circuit court, district attorney, juvenile intake, and the sheriff. Circuit court, new amplifiers and mixers in 10 courtrooms. We have followed a process of updating the technology in each courtroom once a year. Typically, it follows the same as the remodeling that's gone on with them. But really this year, we found that there are a lot of these amplifiers and mixers, those are for the audio in those rooms, that they've reached end of life, and we just need to replace them so that the courtrooms continue to operate effectively. Circuit court to add cabling for branch 4 and courtroom 317 for the digital audio recording equipment installation. The state comes down and they install the digital audio recording, and it's up to the counties to handle all the wiring for that. Circuit court to add a second TV monitor in courtroom 124. District attorney and juvenile intake, it's just one is upgrading a printer for the DA and the other is a new MFD. Juvenile intake's MFD is a multifunction device, so that's a printer, scanner, copier. Theirs is over 8 years old. We've seen a full life out of that one. This next one is a fairly significant one for the sheriff. It's the Wi-Fi for body BWCs, our body-worn cameras inside the jail in KCDC. So right now, all of the detention staff wear the body-worn cameras as they're in the facilities, but they can't, if they're in an area where there's no Wi-Fi connectivity, which is the majority of those facilities, because before the body-worn cameras, we didn't need Wi-Fi everywhere. So this is adding the wireless network that's necessary so this goes directly to the safety of the staff and the detainees.
I love nothing better than to listen to stuff about IT. But in the interest of time, is there a way to hit the highlights on these projects?
Yes.
And the policies?
Yes.
Okay.
The last major one here is the squad toughbooks that I'll just touch on. $33,000.
Whatever you feel is most important. I don't want to cut you off. No. I just want to, I mean, you know, we can.
I'm okay. Good. That Squad Tough Book one is the most significant left there, and that's $33,000. That's as they get new squads in, we need to put laptops in them. If we go to Project 6, you can see here, the only one that's of particular note here is the miscellaneous highway civil engineering software. Miscellaneous, just don't read into that, that it's, you know, whatever they feel like. They've got some specific products that go to building the plans they have for highways. And then Project 7, there are no video conferencing, audiovisual projects. Project 8, this is one where normally we request about $25,000, and this year we reduced it to zero just to help balance the budget overall. Project 9, this is the IT contractor support. That's $135,000. And like we discussed before, this is really to help us move projects forward when we're struggling with them. Project 10, this one is worth noting. So over time, we've got this Project 10, which is capital reduction. This has come from the county board. It's come from the county executive. It's come from this year, I think, is the first year the steering committee has directed a reduction. So this is the most significant reduction we've seen to date. So if you add up all the items we discussed, it's $2.347 million. It's up to IT to manage that and reduce the costs over the year down to the $2 million. So there's not a lot more to say on that one. We work constantly. We make estimates the best that we can, such as the ERP. That's a great example of one where there's a variation of $300,000 between the three finalists in that. So that's just an example of where we estimate the best that we can. So then if you go to Project 12, I'm not going to go over this unless anyone has specific questions. This is the broadband initiative. This is the $1.5 million of ARPA funds. If anyone has questions, I'm happy to answer them. Supervisor Decker, I think, asked a lot of great questions at the board meeting, so if there aren't any further questions. So that's the end of
Hold
the
on.
Capital.
Supervisor Salivary.
Thank you. Yes, I just have one question. You were talking earlier about cutting your interns and changing your staff, and yet if we look at Project 9, there's a IT contractor that you're looking to hire for $135,000. Would that be only for 1 year, or are you talking about having some idea of 23? Is this smarter to do than add someone to your staff? Is that going to be covered by someone? How are you figuring this in?
So Project 9 isn't a single person. Project 9 really goes to help us address critical areas. So for example, if we're working on something and we're having a particular issue with the database and we need a database expert, those people come at $200 to $250 an hour. Those are highly trained specialists. They have very deep knowledge in a topic that at the county we're just not able to have that deep of knowledge in. And so we bring them in to help us address key areas like that in projects that we're executing. If it's a security person, if it's a database, if it's a programmer, sometimes it's a business analyst to help us document processes before we begin the project so that we know what we need to do. So it varies on what that money gets used for depending on the year and the need.
So, and I don't mean anything negative by the comment, but this is something that you think you may be over your head in if you try to have a staff member work through the same concern.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And I just to add on to what you're saying, that is frequently the case with organizations of our size. We have people that are outstanding at maintaining and you know, improving our systems, but implementing something is a whole different level of knowledge that you have to have extremely deep knowledge in, and that's why it shows up here.
Thank you, Chair.
Sure.
Continue, please.
So that is the capital and operational budget. Unless there's any other questions on that, I can talk a little bit about the policies.
Before we get into policies, I just want to bring up, if there, Barna, is there a way to have a couple of interns funded for IT?
So what we could do is at the end of year closeout, we can take a look at if in the countywide HR intern and temporary positions, and we could fund it with that and then have the county board vote to carry that over and allocate those funds for interns.
So how certain are you that we would have some funds, $20,000 or $30,000 for interns? Because we had $20,000 last year for interns.
I would have to have Director Tappa speak to that.
There's a good chance that we'll have some funds left over, but that of course remains to be seen.
Pardon me?
There's a good chance that we may have some funds left over, but we use temporary folks as we need them. So, you know, something could change by year end, but there's a good chance we would have some funds left over.
So how do we deal with that now? If we want to say, if we want to give them the authority to go out and get a couple of interns for IT without making a motion here, what do you propose to get this done? Because I'll take a motion if we have to, but let's see what you got.
I could write up some budget resolution language, and we could introduce that on Thursday.
That sounds good.
I know.
Supervisor Kubicki.
Mr. Barr, you mentioned about bringing it to the board floor for approval from the county board. Is that a simple majority or two-thirds vote?
Two-thirds.
That's fine. If people don't want interns, they can vote no.
I
think that's a good program, and I think if you could figure out a way to creatively do it, and we don't have to make a motion and increase the budget right now, and you can put language in the budget resolution, I'd be satisfied with that. Does anybody have on the committee or in the audience here have any questions on that? Okay.
When I write that language, just to give some parameters to my language, would you prefer to have the language say that if there are some available funds up to a certain dollar amount, that you would approve the carryover of that?
Yeah, but you're throwing a very vague thing in there. I would like to see us have the availability to get a couple of interns. So if you're saying that you're going to put budget resolution language in that says if there might be some, that's kind of in the cloud type thing. I don't know what.
So if you wanted to make it more specific, I can write it that there will be 10, 15, up to whatever dollar amount.
Yeah, up to 20 like they had last year, and then we can pull it out or not have it.
Okay.
Go ahead, I see you, but you respond to that, and then we'll go Supervisor Burke. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Barnett, I think we're going to be, we're not going to have expended our staff development again to a significant degree this year.
Okay.
I think that it would probably cover the $20,000. So then I could just plan to make sure I don't exceed, I leave that so that we can carry over the staff development from 21 into 22.
That's what I like, creative thinking. Very good, very good. Did you, Supervisor Burke?
So I heard 20,000, but I thought I heard earlier that it was $15 an hour, which comes out to the 3,800 a year.
It's unlikely we'd have someone that would work 2,000 hours in a year.
Okay. Right?
It's the time it takes for us to find someone, if we're lucky if we get them to start, and then if that person only works for a few months, then finding the next person. We've seldom had the opportunity. The one that I referenced, we just got lucky because he happened to have graduated. So.
And how many interns are we losing? Just one?
It just varies. It depends on how many candidates we get and how many we're able to hire at any given time.
So of all interns last year, what was ours?
For 21, so far it hasn't been any. Not for anything other than the beginning of the year, we just had no time. We never could have handled bringing on and training interns. And honestly, after those first 5 months, IT has spent the next 3 or 4 months getting getting things right and getting our projects back on track.
But you're comfortable with the 20,000?
Mm-hmm.
So you could, if it next, the beginning of next year, you could start to look at that though, right? Are you caught up, or are we having this discussion for no purpose?
No, we're caught up enough certainly to do it, and we've been working with HR now to start recruiting for interns next year.
Okay, so if you guys will figure out how that's going to work, but I'd like to have $30,000 available for interns if we need it from somewhere creative out of this so that we don't have to increase the budget, that would be great.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, policies.
So I guess I'll open the floor first. Does anyone have questions on any specific policies? So I'm going to just start off with the top, the summary. The IT policies submitted for approval are a comprehensive set of practices necessary to establish and formalize appropriate guidance for the security, stability, and management of county technology. These policies are used to outline how county information technology manages resources to internal and external entities. These policies are frequently cited in response to audits and especially in relation to compliance requirements such as HIPAA, CGIS, PCI DSS, which has to do with financial transactions, PII or PHI, which is personal information or personal health information. And then there's a short description of each below. I'm not going to go over all of these. I think what I want to summarize to you is the bulk of these are a recognition of the things that we're already doing. There are some changes that are included in here. So if we just go down the list, the first one where I'd say there's a little bit of a change is you go down to bring your own device policy. So right now, so many of you probably have your smartphone that wasn't issued by the county connected to your email. And when you do that, if maybe you decide not to run for office next year, and when you do that, we rely on you to delete the county data from there. If we wanted to wipe that data and we issued a device or a wipe to your phone to make sure the data gets cleaned off, it'll wipe out your entire phone. The BYOD policy sets us up with the appropriate policy so that we use a product that's called Microsoft Intune, that it puts some information protection around it, and it makes you have to use your connect to our data in a certain way, but then if we ever need to wipe our data, it only wipes our data, nothing else. It doesn't touch anything else on your phone. So this is why that one in particular is a little bit different, because we haven't had that requirement before, and without the requirement sometimes it's not always easy to get people compliant. With it becoming a policy, it allows us to enforce it.
So basically these policies are what you're doing now, you're just putting them in writing?
Yes, with the exception like that one might be an example.
Are there any other ones that are in here that we might want to pay attention to, like people can work from home or any weird stuff that I want to know about?
I didn't sneak anything like that.
Okay, and I appreciate you being honest with me, because I'm asking an honest question. So,
I think one that I want to call your attention to, just because this topic comes up frequently enough, but the data classification, handling, and protection, that has to do with classifying our data so that there are different levels of how we're treating that data. And the only reason I bring it up is because sometimes that can become a sensitive topic in relation to open records, because that does identify data that wouldn't necessarily become available through open records. And really what we're talking about is PII, so social security numbers. It might address confidential information. We're not going to turn over the logon information for our servers. Those are things, and it just gives us that classification so that we can identify the data. And I just bring that one up because I would expect that one. And the next one, the data retention and disposal policy. I sat through the meeting when Joint Services was bringing forward theirs, and it was a very hot topic. So I just wanted to bring that one up. We're not doing anything crazy. It states right at the beginning that it's going to comply with the county's retention requirements. The only thing that I think could become a question is that we state that after 7 years, emails will automatically be removed from the system unless they're specifically identified for longer term retention. It's just not realistic to hang on to the data forever. So 7 years would be the default, and there we'll have policies that let us specifically approach and say this one is requires 20-year retention or whatever it is. Beyond that, I think there is a remote access policy in here. It's not a remote worker. It's remote access. It defines how people will have to access our network remotely, not that they can do it. That's all of them.
Okay. Any questions on any of these policies that he has went over? Any questions on the entire IT budget? Any questions on the intern issue that we're going to work on? Any questions on anything? Seeing none.
Make a motion to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Juhas to approve the IT budget. One last call for questions. John?
Sorry, so I'm just trying to form this in my mind. So the current plan, as far as interns go, is that because they didn't use all of their staff development funds, they're going to write in a policy that says, like, as long as we have $20,000 in carryover, this is what it'll be applied to.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly. And if not, then we'll get money from Clara or somewhere. We'll find the money so that they can do the intern thing. You heard it, okay? We had money coming at us from different areas. So they'll figure it out, and we'll be okay with that.
So by approving that tonight, we're also approving in using those funds and then
using... No. Okay. No. We're going to get that crack on Thursday night when the budget resolution comes before us, and that language is going to be in there. So we're not increasing our budget per se. That's going to go to the county board. They're going to use funds that would be carried over for something else to that end to allow that to continue.
Okay.
So that's
how
that's... No problem. Seeing no other questions, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great AAA day.
Pardon me?
No problem until we get to the county board.
I think we should take a 5-minute recess for the last thing.
Yeah.
Okay, at this point, this committee will take a 6-minute and 32-second recess, and we will reconvene after that. Thank you.
I don't remember. I couldn't
wait
anymore.
Good.
Much water.
Pardon?
I never remember.
Oh. Who are you?
When Monica asked about why we had